What is my status? Do I belong? Am I important? Do I matter? What is my status? You've asked yourself those questions. Sometimes when you move into a new context, sometimes facing a new challenge, sometimes when things have changed in the midst of an old context. It is a basic human need. We are social creatures. It's universal. We are all wondering all the time, what is my status? Am I important? Do I belong? Do I matter? What is my status? And it's something that goes wrong for us terribly easily. When people have status, they abuse it. This boy in high school, his name was Scott. He's in the youth group of the church I served. After youth group one night, he was in the church office, and I went in there, and he had a big pen, a big ballpoint pen, and on the planning calendar that was on the secretary's desk, he was digging in with his ballpoint pen and driving it here and there and everywhere across his calendar, tearing the pages. I said, "Scott, what are you doing?" And he said, "My dad is an elder in this church. I'll do what I want." I have status here. My dad's an elder. Film, very popular right now, The Wolf of Wall Street, about young men with incredible privilege, incredible status, incredible power, completely abusing it, misunderstanding, violating the trust that came to them with that great privilege, with the importance that they had. We abuse the status we recognize. And we do violence if someone threatens our status. In some fashion, if our status is threatened, we are primed, we are triggered to react with defensiveness and protectiveness. Verbally, at least. We mentioned last week, Downton Abbey was about to start again, and sure enough, we had the first episode, and Carson, the butler, made bold to exercise a privilege of his status as friend, as guide, and to offer counsel to Lady Mary. And it threatened Lady Mary's status, and she got up on her high horse and she put Carson down right now. Oftentimes, sadly, tragically, it goes to more violence than that. Through the end of the year, recapping the big stories, publications were talking about Christopher Dorner, the police person who lost his job and began striking out at those he felt had taken that status from him, and there's a string of murders in his wake. All of these terrible murders, shootings, have to do with someone threatened about their status being taken. We go to awful violence. And then we suffer violence when we imagine that we don't have status. We put up with violence, abuse, imagining that we haven't status or that we've lost it, we've forfeited it in some fashion. Happened not long ago. ran into someone who has been in our midst, been in our fellowship, said, I missed you. And they allowed that they have undergone the kinds of things in life we don't like to imagine. Been accused of a crime. Been accused of falsehood. And therefore they felt they weren't worthy to be in church. And I said, oh man, here it happens again. Just when people really need to be here, they say, oh, I'm not worthy, and they're not here. We suffer the violence of separation from that circle that upholds us. We imagine, oh, I don't have status there anymore. Or the violence gets even worse. At its worst, a suicide. Someone, a new pastor to our presbytery, I had lunch with him last week, and he allowed, he's getting to know the sights, and he said, oh man, I really love driving over the Colorado Bridge. And I said, yes, it's a magnificent structure. Has a long history. In the years after the stock market crash, they called it the suicide bridge. Men were so forlorn about their loss of status when their stocks lost value that they thought, oh, who am I? So it's pivotal, it's central to our experience as human beings. We tend to get it wrong by abusing it. We tend to do violence when we're afraid we're losing it, and then we suffer violence when we're afraid we've lost it. Apostle Paul says God's goal is for us to become mature adults. There must be some word, there must be some perspective on this matter of status. And there is. There is a deep affirmation. Answers to three really important questions about status. And they're throughout the gospel. They're deeply here in the book of Ephesians. What is my status? Do I have status? And the answer that comes to us in the good news, in our story that Paul emphasizes in the book of Ephesians, yes, yes, you are the beloved child of God. That is your status. We've heard from several angles about God's mighty voice over the water, about God's voice coming with power, about it being so, and about what God said to Jesus at his baptism. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. And we are in Christ, the Apostle Paul says. We are in Christ, and that word is said to us. You are my beloved child in whom I am well pleased. We do our baptisms typically in the midst of the sanctuary. Presbyterians, we can get to imagining that, oh yeah, I'm the child of God when I'm in here. When I'm in the sanctuary, I'm the child of God. But as soon as I get out there, you know, who knows who I am? Good to remember that Jesus' baptism was in public. It wasn't in a sanctuary. It's in the River Jordan where everybody was going, the story tells us. This was out in public. And the story comes to us in two ways. In one of the tellings, everybody heard the voice of God say, this is my child. And everybody knew. And what an affirmation to be in the midst. We just sang Child of Promise. And we sang it. We would sing it at a baptism if we were baptizing somebody, typically an infant. But I was just thinking, how would it be? We'd have to take the time. If we sang that song once for every person in this room, and one of the times we sang it, we're singing to you. Child of promise, child of blessing, lead us. There's magnificence to a public affirmation. In the other telling of the story in the Gospels, the only person who heard God say that was Jesus. And he had to hold on to that himself. No one else knew and would have reason to treat him in that way. Was it affirmation he heard and he knew and that he had to hold on to? You are my beloved child. What is my status? In this room, in every room, in this place, in all places, in all times, I am the beloved child of God. You are. How did I get it? How did I come to have this status? It's a big part of the book of Ephesians. When I was in high school, on the football team, junior in high school, and in that particular time, our coach was trying to do things. Teams do this more and more, but energize, deepen the experience. And so one of the games in the season was Father's Night. And on that night, all the players' dads came, wore their warm-up jacket, and stood behind the bench on the sideline. And as it happens, in that time, my father was in Vietnam. And I got thinking about Father's Night. And my attention and affection landed on my history teacher, who's a man I loved and respected. And I went to Mr. Sam and said, "Would you be my dad for Father's Night at the football game?" And he said, "Yes." And he was, and it was a touching thing. It ended up issuing in a conversation between him and my father when my father returned. It was wholesome in many ways, and I was blessed, and I had someone to stand for me on the sidelines. What the Apostle Paul wants us to pick up, you see in that story, I realized I needed a dad, and I went out looking for one, and I found one to say yes to me. And it was a blessing, and it was a good thing. But what Paul is saying is, we got adopted without asking for a dad. In fact, without being on the team. In fact, without even knowing there was a game. And then comes this father, this parent who says, "Hey, listen, there is a game, you're on the team, and I'm going to be there behind you." It's that big of a surprise, Paul says. It just is coming from nowhere. We didn't even know there was a game, and now there's a game, there's a team, I'm on it, I'm in it, and he's going to be there. Whew, Paul says. The book of Ephesians is just full of Paul. I can't believe it. It's just so out of the blue. The whole package. And here it comes to me. There's stories. You hear stories like this. I heard one from this pastor who was talking about the Colorado Bridge, about a guy who discovered that he'd won the lottery. He got looking around, and The news was saying, "There's one winner out there. We don't know who it is. You know, they haven't come forward." He goes, "Oh, how about that?" And then he thinks to himself, he said, the winner came from someplace where he didn't live. So he's shrugging. Days go by. Then he remembers, "Oh, yeah, my delivery route took me down through there a month ago, and I bought a sandwich and a lottery ticket." He goes and gets it. I'm the winner. That gets toward it. But it goes bigger than that. What if you didn't even know there was a lottery? And you find out there was a lottery, there was a huge jackpot, someone bought a ticket for you, and it's the winner. That's how crazy it is, says Paul. It's, wow. And you are the winner. You are in the game. How did this come to me? By the initiative of God that I can't even imagine. I have this status as adopted child. And what does it confer? What does it give me? To what does it privilege me? We got that high school kid, Scott, tearing up the calendar. My dad's an elder here. And Paul says, no. God adopted us in this way. God took the initiative beyond whatever we can imagine and made us his adopted children. We are what he's made us to be, to live in this life of good works that he's prepared before us, that we're just going to walk into and be surprised about. I left the office on Thursday after a morning meeting. I was going down to the South Pass Library, wanted to be away from the phone and drop-ins and be thinking about this sermon and other things. Okay, so I'm going to go to the library, have this space. And I get there, and I open up my stuff, and I get spread out on the table there, the library table, and I'm just about to go to work. And who comes across my field of vision but a former member of Calvary? And I've run into this former member once before, about 3 months ago, and it happened to be at a point in time when this person was really wrestling with a tough decision, and they said, oh, man, how interesting to come across you, Pastor Rex. Here's what I'm wrestling with. What do you think? And here it happened again, and they go, oh, I can't believe when I run into you, I'm wrestling with this decision. What do you think? So, my plan, I walked into this opportunity to make a difference in a life. Paul says that kind of thing is not an accident. That's what's going on. We have been freely adopted and made the beloved child of God because God has prepared these things for us to just walk into them and say, oh, here I am. Look at this. This one went around. You may have seen it. A musician. He had opportunity to play in the midtown, the Manhattan Starbucks. Apparently it's the mecca for musicians playing for change, if you can get in to play there. And he and his group were playing there one night, doing very well. People were touched. Their basket was full. A lot of people were making donations, giving them tips for their playing. And he says, during our emotional rendition of the classic, If You Don't Know Me By Now, I noticed a lady sitting in one of the lounge chairs across from me. She was swaying to the beat and singing along. After the tune was over, she approached me. I apologized for singing along on that song. Did it bother you? She asked. No, I replied. We love it when the audience joins in. Would you like to sing up front on the next selection? To my delight, she accepted my invitation. You choose, I said. What are you in the mood to sing? Well, do you know any old hymns? Hymns. This woman didn't know who she was dealing with. I cut my teeth on hymns. Before I was even born, I was going to church. I gave our guest singer a knowing look. Name one. Oh, I don't know. There are so many good ones. You pick one. Okay, I replied. How about his eye is on the sparrow? My new friend was silent, her eyes averted. Then she fixed her eyes on mine again and said, "Yeah, let's do that one." She slowly nodded her head, put down her purse, straightened her jacket, faced the center of the shop. With my two-bar set up, she began to sing. "Why should I be discouraged? Why should the shadows come?" The audience of coffee drinkers was transfixed. Even the gurgling noises of the cappuccino machine ceased as the employees stopped what they were doing to listen. The song rose to its conclusion. "I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me." When the last note was sung, the applause crescendoed to a deafening roar that would have rivaled a sold-out crowd at Carnegie Hall. Embarrassed, the woman tried to shout over the din, "Oh, y'all, go back to your coffee. I didn't come here to do a concert. I just came here to get something to drink, just like you." But the ovation continued. I embraced my new friend. "You, my dear, have made my whole year. That was beautiful." "Well, it's funny that you picked that particular hymn," she said. "Why is that?" "Well," she hesitated again, "that was my daughter's favorite song." "Really?" I exclaimed. "Yes," she said, then grabbed my hands. By this time, the applause had subsided and it was business as usual. She was 16. She died of a brain tumor last week. I said the first thing that found its way through my stunned silence, "Are you going to be okay?" She smiled through tear-filled eyes, squeezed my hands. "I'm going to be okay. I've just got to keep trusting the Lord and singing his songs, and everything's going to be just fine." She picked up her bag and gave me her card, and then she was gone. Was it just a coincidence that we happened to be singing in that particular coffee shop on that particular night? Coincidence that this wonderful lady just happened to walk into that particular shop? Coincidence that of all the hymns to choose from, I happened to pick the very hymn that was the favorite of her daughter who had died the week before? I refuse to believe it. We are God's creation. We are what God has made us to walk into good works that he has prepared beforehand. There it is. What is my status? Beloved child of God, in any and all times and places. How do I get it? The free choice of God that just can't be understood. What does it mean? It means I'll always have work to do. There will always be before me some blessing to make that God has prepared beforehand. These are deep truths. And they tend to get away from us. That's why good on this day, to remember them. Hear the voice of God. You are my beloved child in any and all times and places, and it's just because I get a kick out of it and out of you. And I've got great things for you to do.